And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started.
We've been talking a lot, Patty, about the significance for you about the year of the year 1964, but also the importance of 1964 musically for you in Detroit and the larger globe in terms of the British invasion. But specifically for you, and again, we spoke about this, in 1964, you had, I don't want to say three epiphanies, but three sure, very important events in your life. And we touched upon these, but the first being in the winter, seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. This was in February. This was on television. You didn't see them live. You weren't 16 then, because they were on in February. So you were 15, and I believe that therefore Susie was 13 when you're seeing them, because both of your birthdays, March and June. And then you, because of the Beatles, you have the entree into this larger musical influence of bands across the pond, not just bubbling up in Detroit and all of these little pockets of Detroit, including suburbs, and creating this whole new sound. And you're exploring already playing musical instruments with your friends, Nan and Diane, but it's a little more folky, you say, to use your words. You got into the folk music and Peter, Paul, and Mary, but it was seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show in winter 64. And then the Hideout, which we're going to talk a lot about, Detroit's Hideout, Dave Leon's Hideout, which opened up in spring of 1964. I believe it was May, you said. And right. You spent the entire summer there. You and Susie were coat check girls. You hadn't even seen the Beatles live yet at Olympia. That would be in September in 1964. So what I want to talk about is this incredible summer at the Hideout. But before we even jump right in, for those who don't know, and it's a very insider idea, the Hideout in Detroit. You really have to know your Detroit music scene out there. But the Hideout is really special, and it was pivotal for you. So tell us about the Hideout. Go back to its origins. What was the Hideout?
Well, Dave Leon, he was in his 20s and, you know, older than us. And he was sort of an entrepreneur, and he loved music. He loved rock. So he decided to, you know, there was no place to go for the teens. You know, we had school dances and stuff like that, but nothing really like a teen club. So this was a new vision of his. And he got this VFW hall, you know, veterans of something, something. And he bought it every Friday night to do something for kids. And it was lines around the corner. I mean, it was packed every night. I mean, picture a plain box with a snack bar at the back in a coat room in a little tiny triangular stage. And then there was a back room. We'll talk about that later, what happened there, but because it was an interesting era. But, you know, the bands would come, all the local bands, and learn their craft and play. And they weren't even playing originals yet. There were a few, maybe they'd write one or two, and we'll get into that history of the bands. But man, they were just learning their craft, playing songs that they knew from the radio and stuff. And it was like horny teens in a sweatbox. That's what it was. You could see the sweat rolling off the walls, everybody dancing and grooving and getting crazy.
Well, before you go on, I just need to pause and really give Dave Leon his props, because you said his vision. I mean, in a way, he's a precursor to another visionary in your life, your manager, Roy Silver, for Fanny, and Neil Bogart for Casablanca, and so many others. But Dave Leon, who we're focusing on, first of all, the name The Hideout as a teen club is just so cool. It's just such a great name. And for those that know Detroit, and for those who don't, you can look it up. The original Hideout, there were others that came about later, but we're talking about the first one. That was in Harper Woods. Harper on Beaufay. And funnily enough, I live on Beaufay down on Jefferson. So there's another.
Full circle.
Full circle. I couldn't believe it when I found that out. But so the Hideout in Harper Woods, it is this teen sweatbox of horny teenagers, as you said. But hey. It's true. Well, it's true. And
Sign of
so,
the times, you
and again,
know.
the hideout, it's the perfect way to go make out. Maybe it should have been the make out instead of the hideout. It
Yeah, really.
was. But I have a question in terms of where you were living, you and your sister. So, well, by the time it opens, I guess you were 16. So were you able to drive from Grosse Pointe over to the hideout? Because it's too far for you to walk unless you were running a marathon, and that's a whole other episode. I mean, did you drive over there?
We drove. I'm sure Nan and Diane were definitely driving. I was driving. Susie wasn't, but my dad got me a car. You know, he was a GM guy. He got discount. I had a car when I was 16. He made it happen. I think it was a yellow convertible. So I could drive over, and it wasn't that far. Probably took me 7, 8 minutes to drive there because it was just, you know, back streets and over to Harper, and there it was.
How
Real
did you
easy.
even hear about it? Was it just like the rumor was?
Oh, everyone was talking about it. It was this exciting new place that we could all go to. You know, it got a lot of press, and he promoted it, you know, and it opened to a lot of excitement. The kids wanted to be there.
And this is a very different time, and I do want to talk about this very different time, but this is mid-1964. So this is a very different era of needing ID to go to clubs, although if they were grown, but you would have never really frequented grown-up clubs at that time. Teenagers didn't
Oh.
really do that. I mean, you may have as performers, right? Do you want to tell me I'm wrong? But let me just sticking to
No,
the
not wrong, but
go
I used to make up proof for everybody. I
ahead.
had phony proof. Yeah, that was one of my side businesses. I would change the license, and yeah, I went to some clubs too. But anyway, I was a teen at the hideout
Okay,
for
but
all
no. First of
purposes.
all, that's a fantastic talent that I love that you have. But in terms of making fake IDs, that's fine. But at the teen club, you didn't need to because
No.
they weren't serving alcohol, correct? Unless it was being
Nothing. They had a
snuck.
bar with soft drinks and little snackies, maybe hot dogs, and then the coat room. Those were the two places that you could hire in to work. Susie and I did. And that was it. The rest was just the stage and the music and the kids. Yeah.
So, how did it even come about that you and Susie started to work there? So, you're hanging out there, you're making out with all the guys. No, I'm
Oh God. I think it had to be, you know, memory is dim this far later, but I think it had to be that he knew Mike and, you know, we were hanging out. Mike probably introduced us and said, "Hey, they can work for you." You know, he was looking for people on Friday nights to work. I'm sure that's how it happened. It was probably a link through Mike because we didn't know Dave. We
So
didn't know.
Mike is your brother, Michael Quattro, and they were
Right.
closer in age. They were more peers, if you will.
Yes.
So that makes sense to me. And of course, your brother loving you and wanting to help you make money would say, "Hey, hire my sisters. They're great." I can see that.
Yeah, this was all the hierarchy of Detroit. Mickey was the earliest, and Dave came right after, and they linked up. They did a lot of stuff together, and Mickey was involved with John Sinclair and Punchy and Pete Andrews. These were all people that were opening more teen clubs. It just started. You know, it kept building through 1964 until there was a bunch of them. So they were linked. In fact, later, Dave married Mike's wife's best friend. So they were very tight, the two couples. So, you know, they worked together a lot.
More
Booking, managing.
connections.
I mean, Dave Leon managed Seeger and Ted Nugent, the Scorpions, and Glenn Frey for a short time. So he had his own little legacy going on with everything he was trying to expand on in the Hideout days.
So even though you and Nan and Diane were noodling around in the basement and playing instruments, you and Susie are coat check girls and hanging out and making out at the hideout, not the two of you per se. But yet you have not, forming a band has not crystallized yet. But music is becoming a passion for you in the sense of creating it, not just learning it or expressing it as you did growing up. So tell me if the hideout for you is also another place where you had those seeds start to take root in terms of watching other people on stage perform. And do you remember who any of these performers were? Were there other girls performing?
No, No girls performing at the Hideout. It was, let's see, let me think. Glenn Frey and his band, they were called the, what was it? The Four of Us, I think it was what the name, that was Glenn's band. And he was buddies with Bob Seger, who taught him to write. And he recorded for Bobby Seger. We'll get into all that. You know, they all have their legacies of where they started as teenagers. Ted Nugent and the Amboy Dukes, Catfish Hodge, The Frost, The Fugitives, SRC, Iggy, who later hooked up with David Bowie. You know, I mean, there's so much legacy that happened in that early era with these young teens wanting to birth their own brand of rock music and different than Motown. And Mitch was there, but he was older. I remember him playing more of schools and things. He was very R&B, you know, blue-eyed soul. He had a great voice. And he was doing all the school circuit, which we ended up doing, but I don't remember him much at the Hideout. He must have played it at some point, but I don't remember. I remember all those other ones that were starting to write and do their music.
So for those that don't know, Mitch that you're referring to is Mitch Ryder, whom you dated briefly.
Mitch, oh my God.
The fun part about doing these episodes with you, Patty, is even though people are only listening to us, I can see you. And when you start to blush, it just makes me giggle. And also, you refer to Bob Seger as your friend, Bobby Seger, which I love.
Bobby, yep.
But tell me if I'm wrong on this, but it makes sense to me that Mitch didn't play at these teen clubs because he was older. And this
Yeah.
was a teen club for teens and, in a way, by teens. The performers were teens too.
Yeah, something about that. I mean, it wasn't like he was an old man, but he was a little bit older and he was doing the R&B thing where the bands that were starting at the Hideout, they were doing rock. They were doing rock, experimenting with their own songs and playing the hits of the day and all that, you know. So it was just bubbling up in a different way than probably Mitch was doing at that point in his career.
You talked about some of these early bands at the Hideout before they were well known. I mean, that's the thing people have to remember. These were your friends. These were teens. This was a club that was new and exciting. It hadn't made history yet. None of you had made history yet. You were just enjoying the moment and relishing in this magic that was happening there. So, talking about these early bands, do you remember any of the covers that they did? Do you have any memories of whether they were good or bad, how they were received by the other teens? I'm just curious.
Well, interestingly, when Dave, as he went on with his club, he made a label, Friday Night at the Hideout, which is full of all the bands that started there, the Underdogs and the Pleasure Seekers and the Mushrooms and Doug Brown and the Omens. The Fugitives were a big popular one. And oh, there were so many. And I can see when I look at the names on the CDs, they're all originals. They're originals that he put on the Friday night at the Hideout. I mean, this is 1964. Nothing like this has ever been done before. This is magic. Taking a bunch of teen bands and putting them on your own label that he started, and it did so well. I mean, we were in a lot of different cities, you know, the pick, and it just blew up. And then later years, other labels co-opted that album and reissued it. That's how popular it was.
I think
It's the roots.
it's the roots, absolutely. But I also think this goes back to, well, all of the talent that Dave Leon was seeing, but again, his vision. Because again, let's go back in time. This is mid 1964. This is not a Detroit music scene that anybody knows is happening. So,
Right.
in the music biz, my dad being a music manager, this is what you did. If you were to introduce a band, a new band, to an audience, you were told to incorporate some kind of cover songs into it so that the audience could sit back and not have to worry about who you were as a new band because they already knew the song, right? So they didn't have to learn a new song and a new band. They could have something familiar. And I think that's incredibly I don't know what the word is, prophetic of him, brilliant of Dave Leone, to have not had you, the Pleasure Seekers, and others do covers, because that could have sold more.
It was. He had a different vision. He was really tuned in, and he loved the rock. And it's amazing what he brought out of the local bands, because, like I said, it's all originals. There's one song, Shake a Tail Feather, that was probably a cover by the Torquays on this album. Everything else is original. And that's pretty early on as this magic is happening with, you know, this new rock scene in Detroit.
Well, and it really speaks to his love and authenticity of the love of music that was coming out of Detroit. Because, sure, he was looking to make a profit. You know, he's not an altruistic businessman per se, but he allowed all of you and your talents to be exposed.
Yes, he pushed
took that
it.
shot. Exactly. He pushed it. He took
he
that
gave
shot.
The platform. He gave the platform. And how visionary was that at that moment in time when Motown was the thing? You know, still early on, Motown was the one everybody talked about. And there were others, but Motown was it. And here comes Dave Leone with this whole new thing, whole new type of rock thing. It wasn't the R&B Motown. He took a chance.
And it wasn't the British Invasion. He could have had
no.
all cover the British Invasion cover songs.
Right.
So he was really going for this originality within Detroit. He recognized it. He supported it. He nurtured it. I think that's incredible.
I said,